There was even a slight chill in the air, a reminder that Labor Day was next weekend. 1 minute warning, Greg called firmly. Before bringing Timmy to the playground, Greg had been on duty for 12 hours, and the always busy emergency room had been absolutely chaotic. Two cars filled with teenagers racing each other on First Avenue had collided and crashed. Incredibly, no one had been killed, but there were three kids with very serious injuries. Greg took his hands off the swing. It was time to let it slow down and stop. The fact that Timmy didn't attempt a futile protest meant that he must be ready to go home, too. Anyhow, they were now the last ones in the playground.
Doctor!
Greg turned to face a powerfully built man of average height with a scarf covering his face. The gun he was holding was aimed at Greg's head. In an instinctive movement, Greg took a long step to the side to get as far away from Timmy as possible. Look, my wallet is in my pocket, he said quietly. You're welcome to it.
Daddy!
Timmy's tone was frightened. He had twisted in the seat and was staring into the eyes of the gunman. In his final moment on Earth, Greg Moran, age 34, distinguished physician, dearly loved husband and father, tried to throw himself on his attacker, but had no chance to escape the fatal shot that hit with deadly accuracy the center of his forehead.
Daddy!
Timmy wailed. The assailant ran to the street, then stopped and turned.
Timmy, tell your mother that she's next, he shouted. Then it's your turn.
The gunshot and the shouted threat were heard by Margie Bless, an elderly woman on her way home from her part-time job in the local bakery. She stood for long seconds absorbing the nightmarish event, the fleeing figure turning the corner, the gun dangling from his hand, the screaming child on the swing, the crumpled figure on the ground. Her fingers trembled so badly it took three tries before she was able to punch in 911. When the operator answered, Margie could only moan,
"Hurry! Hurry! He may come back. He shot a man, then he threatened the child."
Her voice trailed off as Timmy shrieked,
"Blue Eyes shot my daddy! Blue Eyes shot my daddy!"
One. Lori Moran looked out the window of her office on the 25th floor of 15 Rockefeller Center. Her view was of the skating rink in the middle of that famous Manhattan complex. It was a sunny but cold March day, and from her vantage point, she could see beginners there wobbling unsteadily on their skates, and in sharp contrast, others who moved across the ice with the grace of ballet dancers. Timmy, her 8-year-old son, loved ice hockey and planned to be good enough to play with the New York Rangers by the time he was 21. Lori smiled as her mind filled with the image of Timmy's face, his expressive brown eyes sparkling with delight as he imagined himself in the position of goalie in future Ranger games. He'll be the image of Greg by then, Lori thought, but quickly gave herself a mental shake and turned her attention to the file on her desk. 36 years old, with shoulder-length hair the color of honey, hazel eyes more green than brown, a slim build and classic features untouched by makeup, Lori was the kind of woman people turned to take a second look at when she passed by. Classy and good-looking was a typical description of her. An award-winning producer at Fisher & Blake Studios, Lori was about to launch a new cable series, one that she had had in mind even before Greg died. Then she had put it away. She felt people might think she had conceived it because of his unsolved murder. The premise involved reenacting unsolved crimes, but instead of using actors, gathering the friends and relatives of the victims to hear from their lips their version of what had happened when the crime occurred. Whenever possible, the actual setting of the crime would be used. It was a risky venture, with great potential for success and also for chaos. She had just come from a meeting with her boss, Brett Young, who had reminded her that she'd sworn she would never touch another reality show.
"Your last two were expensive flops, Lori," he said. "We can't afford another one." Then he pointedly added, "Neither can you."
Now, as Lori sipped